Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing new ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Hey, we've got some new ideas today. New ideas for you, which have to do with, some of this has to do with abuse, verbal abuse, attack, how to defend yourself. I repeatedly run into people who come to see me who complain about their mates yelling at them, picking at them, screaming at them, shouting at them, finding fault with them, pecking at them. You're in one of those relationships. Can you imagine being with somebody who's just all the time on your case? On your case, and they just don't get off your case. And so they raise their voice and they do certain things, and you don't know how to deal with them. You just don't know how to deal with them. So I looked to nature and I said, well, okay, what did we learn from our ancestors about how to deal with attack in general, right? So what did the animals do? Well, here are some of the different strategies that animals use when they are attacked. The first most natural one seems to be to run. Run like a rabbit. You know, you run like your cat when it hears a loud noise. Boom. Get out of that room. Get away. There's somebody yelling at me. I'm going to run away. So that's what many people do. Many people, whenever they're confronted, they just run away. Let me out of here. I'm not talking to you. Another thing that people do, and nature does, is you counterattack. Someone attacks you. Someone says something to you. Somebody blames you. Somebody yells at you, picks at you, finds fault with you. You get like a grizzly, you know, a grizzly bear. You don't mess with grizzly bears. You just don't mess with them. You don't go up to a grizzly bear and say to a grizzly, I think you should take a bath. You just don't do it. A grizzly will rip your heart out. They are not somebody who most likely will respond to negotiation. Nope. Grizzlies don't take anything from anybody. So part of what people do very often is if somebody attacks you, you scream right back. You fight right back. You become a grizzly. Become like a pit bull. You just go after them like an alligator, you know. Ah! Chase after them. You're not going to let them go. You become twice as forceful. Now I'm talking about verbally, and I'm not talking about physically. But you overpower the person who yells at you. So somebody screams at you, you scream louder. You know, and then they scream louder, and then you scream louder. That's another way. So in nature, we've learned two things. You could either be a rabbit or you could be a grizzly. Grizzly counterattacks, the rabbit runs away. Or you could do another thing now. Another thing is to freeze. Now, this is kind of fascinating. Freeze. In Science Daily, humans in danger are similar to deer in the headlights. We've always heard about deer in the headlights. You know, if a car comes along and there's a deer on the road, the car stares at the headlights. The deer stares at the headlights. And the deer stares at the headlights, and you wonder why, and, you know, of course, you're speeding towards it. Well, this phenomenon in psychophysiology found that this thing is called a posturographic kind of recordings of a thing that show that the animal literally has a heartbeat freeze at the moment in response to the visual impact of the lights shining in its eyes. The body literally freezes. Humans, as well, have this what's called fear bradycardia, that's what it is, which is freezing. So someone screams at you, the first thing is to freeze. It's almost the most natural human response. In fact, freezing was seen during the 9/11 attack. People stood there, couldn't believe what was going on, but they were caught in their freeze. See? So you come home, expecting everything to be okay. Somebody's screaming at you. You kind of freeze. You don't know what's going on. You have a few minutes now. Freezing buys you a little time, but you could be like a deer. So like I said, now there are three responses. You could freeze. You could run like a rabbit. You could attack like a grizzly. You could freeze like a deer. But there are more. There are many more strategies that humans use and animals use. Another one is I call the pet dog approach. The pet dog approach is somebody yells at you for doing something wrong, and the whole idea is you don't want to go away because you need the person, you're dependent on them in some way, but what you're going to do is show contrition. You're going to show regret, humility, and you're going to whimper. You know, like you come home and you found that your dog ate your slipper. And you pick up the slipper and you yell at the dog, and the dog knew that it did something wrong, but it doesn't run away. It stays around you and slithers around and slinks and whimpers, and you, how could you chew my slipper? And you yell at it and yell at it, and it just gives you this kind of sorrowful eyes. Oh, I'm sorry. So imagine if you yell at somebody you love, and it's a mate, and you go home to your girlfriend and you say to her, and she was supposed to make dinner, but she fell asleep, and you yell at her. One of her strategies could be the pet dog strategy. Whimper, I'm sorry, I'm really... And she means it. She whimpers. She doesn't want to leave you. She doesn't want to walk away. She doesn't want to counterattack. It's called the pet dog response. I made these all up. And, of course, you could even play dead. I mean, and many people do. When you get angry at someone and you start yelling at them, they could sink into a deep hole of depression. And in this deep hole of depression, they're kind of immobile. And you're yelling at them, but they're not just stonewalling you. Stonewalling is a different thing. They're sinking by the moment into this dark cave where you can't touch them. Like a possum, you know? They're playing dead. And they actually are dying on the inside. Armand DeMille with you, talking about the different responses that people have, and I'm going to propose to you today an alternate to all of these responses that I think you'll find fascinating. Now, the most common male response to what men consider to be women's hysteria. Now, I'm using what men consider women's hysteria. So many men talk about, and I see many men, they talk about when certain times there are going to be days when the women are going to be just on their case no matter what. The most common response is to call what we call the turtle. You become a turtle. Now, this is stonewalling. This is where the person is yelling at you and screaming at you, and you're kind of making believe you're taking it in, but you're behind this protective shell. And you're a turtle now. See, and they keep pounding at you, and you're kind of agreeing with them and hearing them, but not hearing them. And little by little, you're behind this resentful shell, and you're boiling inside, and you're angry inside. But you know it doesn't pay to fight back. So you go into your turtle shell, and you do the turtle. The turtle is a very powerful force. Did you ever see a turtle when it's got its head and its legs pulled in and it's got everything kind of covered up and a dog is sniffing around it? You know, and tries to turn it over and tries to move it. You can't get to the turtle. The turtle is fully defended. So if a man is yelling at a woman who turtles and he thinks he's making his point is never made. You know, the point is that she's just not even hearing it. She's just storing it up on the inside with anger behind that turtle shell. These are the common kind of things that people do. We talked about running away. We talk about attacking. We talk about freezing. We talk about the pet dog who just takes the whipping and keeps on ticking. We talked about playing possum, which is sinking into depression. And we talked about the turtle. Is there another way? What do you do when someone you know is bent out of shape? And you love them, but they're bent out of shape and they're yelling at you. and they're yelling at you and they're picking at you and something is going on and you know it and you know it's not your fault. How do you handle them? That's the question of the day. How do you handle them without running away, without playing possum, without playing silly games, without stonewalling them? How do you deal with it? How do you deal with somebody who's so bent at the moment? Now, one woman I know said she sees her husband when he gets like this, she sees it as an illness. She said that's his illness when he's screaming. And I perceive it as his illness. And that helps me to see that the words he's saying is not what's important, but the illness is speaking. This is the illness. See, if you had somebody who had a serious physical illness, like broken arms, broken legs, or something like that, something, or cancer or something, and you saw them screaming and yelling, you would kind of give them a lot of room. But people with mental problems, you tend not to make as much room for. You know, so, how do you deal with somebody you love who's, quote, bent out of shape? Now, for example, let's say that they're in pain and they take painkillers. Now, we know that painkillers have a way of inhibiting the uptake of reserpine in the body. Yes, reserpine, which is something that we have, a neurotransmitter that helps you calm down. But if you inhibit the uptake of reserpine, then one of the things that are going to happen when you have these painkillers in your body is you're going to be short-tempered. You're not going to be able to control yourself. So you know people who have a bad back and they take Percocet and they start screaming at you, or Demerol, and they start screaming at you. You know, they don't have the control mechanism that comes in for people normally that says, cool it, calm down. But if you know that your mate is doing this pain-killing drug or steroids or whatever they're on at the moment, why is it you can't look at them as sick? What is it? Why can't you look at their screaming at you as part of their illness? Well, you see, there's a question, because, you know, it's not easy to do. Nope, it's not easy to look at somebody who's yelling at you and screaming at you, and for you to look at them and say, okay, it's your illness. Well, first of all, if you tell somebody it's their illness, they're going to attack you. It's like telling somebody with PMS that they have PMS. It's not a good idea. Because part of the syndrome is to have it not recognizable, for the person to believe that it's real, that the issues that they're fighting about are real. Part of the only way you could carry on this much aggression is to believe that you're right. So for I'll go back to a person on painkillers. A person on painkillers, their body is demanding some kind of relief. They feel tension building from these painkillers. They have no reserpine uptake. They have no way of resolving this. They need to blow up. So they blow up, and their explosion creates dopamine and creates some kind of solution to their problem. They are now exploding out of a need, and you're the target because you're there. So they're yelling at you, right? Now they're screaming at you, but they have to, in order for them to believe that they're screaming at you, they have to believe it. They have to say, you're wrong. You really left the toilet seat down on purpose. You didn't put it back up the way it's supposed to be. And you start, or the toothpaste cap, you know. You start doing, fighting about something stupid. So you can't say to somebody who's yelling at you about the cap on the toothpaste being left off, you can't say to them, look, this is your drug talking. This is a painkiller that you're taking for your hip. You got to stop taking the painkiller because it's making you crazy. Because the painkiller is going to respond to you and say, oh, no, you're not going to take me away. And it's going to create a fight with you. You can't say to somebody who's hormonally unbalanced at any given moment that it's their hormones that are attacking you at the moment, because the hormone inside is going to say, oh, no, this is really about you. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind, trying to help you deal with people who attack you, or maybe even you as an attacker. And something that I discovered that I think is very helpful. Very, very helpful. I'm sure many of you listening and know people like this. Okay, there's a couple of places we have to go. One is, let's imagine, why are we so crippled when somebody screams at us? Why is it so important? Going back to nature. You know, you watch a parent animal screaming at a baby animal, right? And they do it. You know, they bark, squeak, squawk, and whatever they do. Well, it turns out that the sound of a parent often immobilizes the infant and the child animal. The very sound takes your will away. Now, did you ever notice that if a lion wants to carry a lion cub around, it picks it up by the scruff of the neck? You know, we discovered that if you bite the scruff of the neck, or if you lift an animal by the scruff of the neck, it goes completely limp. Because it does something. It actually changes the metabolism. It actually gives the child, the thing that you're carrying actually falls away. It's one of the ways that dog cleaners, you know, clean dogs and animals and cats. They grab them by the scruff and they, without even knowing it, they're getting the dog or cat to be more docile. So there are things that you could do to somebody that make them drop their metabolism, and it's effective. So what parents do to babies is they frequently will raise their voice to drop the will of the acting out child. You were conditioned by a parent that when they raise their voice, you most likely froze. This frozen conditioning continues into adulthood. And it's very likely that when somebody screams at you, you lose your will. You just drop away. You just feel like you're nothing. They found this about the slap in the face, right? They found the thing about the slap in the face. Why is it being slapped in the face so amazingly powerful in making a person feel like they could cry? Well, you punch them in the stomach and they may not cry as much. Well, they traced the slapping of the face to what they call the splash reflex. The splash reflex is what divers use. You know, if you're a diver and you want to swim underwater for a long period of time, you notice they don't start off from ground level. They start off from diving. Because when water hits your face, it drops your metabolism and you use less oxygen. So when you dive into water and the water splashes your face, you actually are using less of your metabolisms, making more oxygen available for you to swim. Whales do it. Do you ever wonder why are the whales jumping out of the water? Right? Why are they jumping up and then splashing down? Well, when they hit the water, it drops their metabolism. You know? Dolphins, you know, found the porpoise in their lives. No, dolphins do this also. They jump just to get that splash effect. So we're kind of amazing. Screaming, or which is the yelling of the adult animals at us, tends to drop us. Why do you think teachers in front of a class raise their voice? Shut up, you kids! And the kids all of a sudden get quiet. Why would they get quiet just because somebody's yelling at them from the front of a class? Because we're conditioned. A raised voice affects us in so many different ways that we are rendered powerless. Isn't that interesting? So, let's now assume two things. Anybody who's screaming at you is probably bent out of shape, because they don't have to be screaming at you. They could be angry with you and telling you they're angry. But if they're screaming, something's wrong. Number one. Number two, when they scream at you, your metabolism shifts in such a way that you don't have the normal power to respond as you would to if they were talking to you. So as soon as they raise their voice, you start to weaken. What do you do? Well, I was talking to a man who said to me, there is nothing when his wife talks to him and starts picking on him And she starts saying to him, there's this wrong with you. You're not motivated. You don't have a job. You don't have this. You don't have that. He says there's nothing he could do. He turtles. He goes into his turtle shell, and then he's just hidden behind his turtle shell until she exhausts herself, and he tells her she's right. Then he plays the pet dog, you know. He does the pet animal. You do the turtle first, and you do the pet animal. Start off with a reindeer freezing the headlights, right? Up, oh, here it comes. She's yelling at me. Boom, you freeze, and then you turtle, and then you do the pet dog. You do these three. So he's talking about these were his only options. And I asked him about his hobby, and his hobby is sailing. So I said, well, what do you do when you're... I said, do you ever get into dangerous water? And he said, once or twice he's hit storms that have capsized many boats. He was caught out at sea. And I said, what do you do when you're caught at sea? And I was just curious. He said, well, the first thing you do is you pull down your sails. Right? That's the very first thing you do. Second thing you do is you batten your hatches. You make sure there are no windows open in your boat. And I said, and I guess the third thing you do is you run downstairs and you hide, hoping the storm ends, right? But doesn't that leave you at the mercy of the boat? No, he says, no, I don't do that. He said, all of my passengers do that. The people who are on the boat with me, they go underneath, but I stay on top, steering the boat into the storm. So I was fascinated by this, and I said to him, but isn't that frightening? He said, no, it's not frightening. He said, the storm comes at me, and this man, who was complaining a minute ago about being this mild-mannered guy who cannot deal with his wife, is now talking about the wrath of nature. He's talking about how this thing comes at him, and it's like it's coming to him and coming to him, and he says he's encountering the sea in its full fury, and it comes at him. And I said, so what do you do? How do you handle the water? He says, I scream at it. I shout, come and give me everything you've got. Go ahead, don't worry, I could handle you. And he talks to the sea as he stays there. He says, because I know that the sea and I are one. We are not enemies. He says, and I just find my groove in with the sea. And I let it have its full fury. He said, and then we get through. Phew, I said. What a fabulous thing. Why don't you do that with your wife? He said, do what? I said, face her in her full fury. Let her come at you with everything she's got. Tell her that you're there and you're present, and you're not ignoring her, and you're not blocking her, but you're not going to believe it, and you're not going to respond just by fighting back, and you're not going to cower and hide underneath, and you're not going to whimper like a pet dog, and you're not going to turtle and bury all the stuff inside, but you're going to be there. And if she needs to scream, let her scream right into your face, and you stand there and say to her, I see you're in pain. Tell me everything you have to tell me. And you let her have it. And you let her have you. You turn yourself over. And what happens, my friends, when you do that, is you feel the pain of seeing someone in so much pain. If she's screaming so hard and yelling at you so hard, she's in pain too. So I don't ask you to have sympathy, empathy, any of those things, but I do ask you at that moment to face the storm. Look at it head on. Take it on. Don't cower. Let the storm come at you, because remember, you and the sea are one. Well, that story really took place the other morning in a conversation I was having with a man during a therapy session. And right after him, another man comes in with a similar story. And he says to me, I don't know what to do. She starts yelling at me. He says, and my son is standing there, so I tell her to calm down because she's going to do bad for Joshua. his son. And he's going to start yelling. And he says, so I just try to stop her because of Joshua. And I said to him, I told him the story about the man who was what I consider to be a buffalo, who stood there against the wind. You know, he was my animal because I've always thought of myself as a buffalo. You stand up and you're at the top and the wind is roaring at you. And just put your head into the wind. You take it. Well, I told him this story. And he said, but I couldn't do that because my son will hear all these screaming. I said, by now your son has turtled. By now your son has learned to protect himself. At his young age, he's already seen the screaming enough. You say to her, come and get me. Give me everything you got. Yell at me with all that you've got. You keep attacking me. I am not going to defend myself. I'm going to listen to what you have to say. I'm going to listen to every word. But I'm not going to react. I'm not going to run away. And I'm not going to get angry with you. And you stand there. And you become aware of the fact that your body is falling away. And you stand there. You stand there like you're a man or a woman who's at the mast of a ship. And you're holding that ship against the sea. And you want to fight the sea because you know any minute now, you're going to be sailing clearly. So I spoke to him about it, and he said, you mean not protect my son? I said, yes, not protect your son. And he said, okay. Well, it was a strange thing. I've spoken to a number of other people about it, and they have all said it was a similar kind of thing. I never thought of it as taking it on, as facing it. So this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, in case you just tuned in. We're talking about this. Now, of course, for women, when a man is raging at you, if he is either drinking or on drugs, get out of the way because he may become violent. This does not mean violence. However, one woman said to me, I know what I do. She says, I have a tape recorder. And I tell him that I'm going to tape his argument because I want to hear what he has to say so I can listen to it later and play it for my therapist. She says, as soon as I tell him I'm going to play it for my therapist, he shuts up. He won't yell at me anymore. That's her. Well, that may be the modern way of diffusing the difference in power between the physical power of a man and a woman. But the truth is, no, if there's a danger of a physical threat, get out of there. It shouldn't come to anything physical. So, and also when a person is drinking or a person is on heavy drugs, if there is no threat of it, you could hear them out. You can hear them out. The other thing you have to do is remember about your family, this thing about your family. Your family did this with you, maybe. And if you have a history of being yelled at, you've got an automatic response inside of you. You have to be willing to take that on. I know some people who I've loved very deeply, and whenever I've raised my voice at them, I watch them just fade away. They disappear. They're not present anymore. They lose you. That's effective strategy. Much better strategy, stand up to it. You know? Stand up to it. Take it in. Be there with the person. Ride the wind. Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. When we get back, I want to take your calls, which I'm sure many of you will have opinions and things to say about this, at 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. I'm going to play you some nice Italian music. And when I play you the Italian music, I want you to repeat the Italian lyrics. You could learn Italian just now. He said them clearly enough. So whatever he says, you say. And see, by the end of the song, you'll probably be fluent. I'll be back with you in just a few minutes.
Nelle case d'oggi, in scatolate. Come le acciughe nascono i bimbi che han già le rughe. I want to know, I want to know, I want to know,
vorrei sapere,
I want to know,
vorrei sapere,
perché la gente,
I want to know,
non dice niente,
I want to know,
I'm Mr. Hyde, I Dr. Jekyll, i costruttori di questi orrori che senza un volto fanno le case dove la carie germoglia già. fai poteva, forse vivo da fede, come da partiva tu vita di fuori mo non beva, non te ne amo fatti, mo bevo non fai, da poteva, non beva,
Adriano Celentano, my friend.
That's cool.
Yeah, isn't it? Adriano Celentano, which is, it's available. C-E-L-E-N-T-A-N-O. I heard that when I was in France once, driving by. I heard it in a car radio. And I said, who is that? Beautiful. 212-209-2900 is our number here. We're taking your calls today. We're talking about the kind of thing you do when you have to deal with an attack. It could be a verbal attack. It could be verbal abuse. It could be constant. It could be inconsistent. It could be hormone-dependent or drug-dependent or mood-dependent. You know, I notice a big difference between men's anger and women's anger. Men have a kind of an anger, I think. This is going to be quite a generalization that runs really deep. I think men's anger has to do with self-image, competition, adequacy, feelings that run really, really essentially deep, stuff that was probably there from childhood. And because their anger gets triggered and comes out all at once, as opposed to having much emotional release, you know, I think it all comes out, but it's all symbolic of the same thing. I think men tend to get angry about the same thing over and over again. I think women, and I know this is a broad generalization, who have a constant flow of emotionally fed hormonal releases in one form or another, have a much greater experience to release the tensions emotionally. So it comes up more often, more frequently. But either way, here's what we know. By the time somebody gets to the point where they're yelling, screaming, or picking on you endlessly, you're no longer at fault. You're not. If somebody's consistently, if somebody thinks you're so bad, they should dump you. Let them divorce you, get rid of you, walk away, grab the children and move to Toronto. You know what I mean? If you really, really dislike somebody that much, standing there and just berating them and fighting with them over and over again means there's something wrong with you to do it. Not if you do it once in a while, not if you're telling somebody you're angry, but screaming at somebody, shouting at somebody, knocking somebody down, telling them how poor they are over and over again, trying to destroy their will. I mean, what's the idea of these arguments? I'm going to scream at you enough until you finally turn around and say, oh, you're right, I'm wrong. And even then, I wouldn't believe you because I know you're just saying it to end my fight. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let me take one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air.
Armand, good afternoon. How are you?
Good. Who is this?
This is Joe.
Joe, thank you. And I appreciate people telling me their names as soon as they call so I can refer to them. Hiya, Joe.
Armand, I think I'd called once, certainly I'd called once before, and I'd mentioned nonviolent communication.
Yes, sure.
And given your, and I don't think I did it justice. To me, I've done a lot of different work. And to me, in the subject that you're talking about, to me, Marshall's work is the most profound, if understood.
Yes, okay. Let me talk about NVC a little bit. I do see it, and I do see how effective it is, especially when two people undertake the NVC way of communication. But I'm talking about when you are confronted with somebody who is rageful, and they are rageful, and you're trying to listen to them. The NVC work is what I call a gitnip. Good in theory, not in practice. Because when you're using such a strategy on somebody who is screaming with you, it really infuriates them even more. So I haven't seen it effective on a one-way thing. I see it a tremendously effective tool when both people agree to do it.
Yeah. So I have my family that we are looking at that and using. We have my wife and I have a 13-year-old and a 16-year-old.
Sure.
And he basically, without ever saying it, he's speaking about unconditional love. Really, when it comes down to it, he's speaking, at least what I hear, he's speaking about unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I happen to be Italian, yes, and I'm quite passionate, and I do, you know, so in answer to your subject here, I have situations at work where I may push the envelope. I have a tendency to push the envelope, and yet it's come, boy, and I've pushed the envelope, and it's come back to me in spades.
Mm-hmm.
And they've come and looked at me, and I've really had to do quite a bit of examination to see how I responded to whatever was out there and how they responded to me. And so I got anger back. I got a whole bunch of stuff back, and it was quite a process for me. And thank God I had some support around me that I could be able to. I had one or two people, thank God, that I could be able to communicate and dialogue with and really get in touch with my feelings and my response and be able to be a lot more open with the process.
Good for you, Joe. Good.
And I must say, it challenged, when I looked at it in the end, it challenged me more than anything else.
Sure. Of course it does.
You know, and looking at his work, and I think for me it's so important that we grab a hold of some sort of tools that we could start to navigate ourselves in a more collaborative, peaceful manner in this world.
Yes. Well, you know, Joe, though, what I'm proposing is different than the NVC process. I'm proposing something else. I'm proposing taking it on full force and not giving the person the kind of words that would naturally flow with an NVC communication. You don't say things like, I want you to know I'm really hearing you and I'm here for you 100% and I want to, because in effect, you're calming yourself down and you're attempting to drop them and their temperament. I'm saying bring it on, full rage. Bring it on. Give me everything you got. Go ahead. You want to shout at me? You want to yell at me? I'm not going to calm you down. Bring it on. I can take it. I can take it, and I could be with you, and I won't respond in kind, but I'm not going to drop myself down to a point where I'm going to hypnotize you into stopping. Instead, I'm going to stand up and take it with you. I'm going to face you like you're the ocean, and I'm at the masthead at the moment.
You know, Armin, that's, yeah, I got that. And I'm not interested in people being nice, and let's have a nice conversation. I want to have an authentic
Absolutely.
Conversation.
And I'm saying, this is what I'm aiming for.
Yeah, and that authenticity, if you are angry, be angry. Be with me. And let us be with our feeling. You know, if we can't, I think, what is John Gray says, if we can't feel it, we can't heal it. You know, that aspect. So to be present to our feelings and what's going on in some of the work of Marshall's is about feelings.
Sure.
Feeling, fulfilled feelings and unmet feelings.
Nice to talk to you, Joe.
Okay, listen, have a great day.
You too. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Armand. How are you?
Good. Who are you?
This is Austin. I saw you back in... I'm getting feedback here. Are you hearing it?
Austin, no, I'm not getting it. Do you have your radio on?
No, it's completely off. Let me see if I get the answering machine here off, too. Hello?
Yeah. Hi. No,
yeah.
I'm hearing some
I'm going to have to call back another day because this feedback is driving me nuts.
Austin, I'm so sorry to hear it. Even if you speak...
Yeah, it comes right back to me, and it's driving me. It's sort of a sonic distortion. It's really getting in the way of my thoughts. So.
Okay. So
my fault or nobody's fault.
Thanks for calling.
Talk to you soon, Roman. Take care. Bye-bye.
See, now, that would be an interesting thing. Imagine if every time you were screaming, you screamed at yourself and you got it as sonic feedback. Very interesting. You know, what if... I know how we could do it. We could do it on delay. You know, you scream into a recording... And then you play it back and you listen to it. And you scream at yourself. I think I may have to work on this a little bit here in the studio. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand. This is Lucia. How are you?
Hello, Lucia.
That's really interesting what you were just talking about, taping, recording yourself. That kind of put a whole different spin on things. But I wanted to... share something regarding the subject. I didn't get the very beginning of the program, but regarding communication, my husband and I have found that when I ask him something or share something with him, if I don't, oftentimes I think I'm getting his attention, but I'm not, because then later on he doesn't recall it or didn't remember it or didn't do what I asked. And so this would go on and on and on and on and on. Till I get to the point where then I'm shouting. And then he looks at me and he goes, you know, I have to be honest with you. When you yell, he says, I don't hear you anymore. I go deaf.
Uh-huh.
He said, it reminds me of my childhood. My dad used to yell at me a lot, and he was abusive to me and my brothers. So whenever you yell, I just see your lips moving, but I don't hear you. And so he said, you know, you have to communicate a different way. And mind you, I say to him, but Alan, I've tried to talk with you and share things with you, and then you don't remember, or, you know, so I'm frustrated. That's why I'm at this point. This isn't where I want to communicate. I'm just kind of at my wit's end at this place, you know? So I was wondering
if
you
had... So, Lucia, yes. Let's say in all of your conversations... How much of your conversation is, in effect, finding some kind of fault with him? How much of the conversations are finding fault with him, even if the fault is justifiable? How much of it is a complaint about him? I'll tell you what he doesn't want to hear. He's tired of being complained about. Mm-hmm. You see, there's a way of communicating where, and this again... is a style. It's a style that says, I have this feeling, I have this need, and you talk about yourself. The way you could always tell whether a relationship is dysfunctional or a conversation is dysfunctional is when one person is saying the word you a lot. You. Now, when on the other side of you usually have an exit. The other person is leaving because they just don't want to be accused that much. So there's another way of communicating, Lucia, where you start saying I, and it becomes all about you and your sensitivity. Now, I'll give you an example of this. So if I was saying to someone, I came home and you didn't have dinner ready, and I got very upset, right? Now, I could either say, you made me upset, Or I could say, I got very upset. And then I could continue to say, there's something about my day that is so tough that I have great expectations when I come home, and perhaps it's not fair of me to expect that you're not going to be exhausted too. But I have these expectations that when I come home, there's going to be a meal waiting for me, and if there's not, maybe you would call me and tell me it's not going to be there, so maybe I could stop and pick up something along the way. I would appreciate it, because my sensitivity is at the end of a day, I'm very sensitive to not having my meal waiting for me. See, so I make it as if it's my craziness, my sensitivity when I'm talking to you. I'm not blaming you for not having the dinner ready. Mm-hmm. If you are Lucia, as I know you are, which means you must come from a Romanian family. I'm only kidding. You come from a culture of people who blame. You know, mm-hmm. And this is the problem. Our families blame. They blame. They point the finger, they point the finger, they point the finger, and the response is just what your husband says. He ducks away. You have to learn not to blame him. Now, what Joe mentioned a little earlier was very helpful when he talked about nonviolent communication. It is interesting. You might take a look at nonviolent communication. There's a skill in how to present it.
You know? Well, let me ask you this. I don't want to take too much of your time. I want other callers to call in. But the thing that's interesting is I'm certain that, you know, I don't always communicate, you know, in a non-selfish manner. I'm certain of that due to, you know, like you said, the way we were raised. But on the other hand, I know that I've made very serious conscious efforts to work on my communication and being more sensitive to, you know, other people when I'm, you know, upset or when I'm making requests. And I try to acknowledge them and their needs and their perspective. And so if I realize that that's probably not done all the time, but more times than not, so I do communicate that way just from knowing, you know, myself. And so if the person still seems to have a little bit of a mental block, is there any other form of communication that you can recommend? I mean, I'm really like...
Sure. So there you may need to have somebody in the middle. Mm-hmm. There you may need to have... You may need to say to him, look, you know, honey, it doesn't work. I'm not communicating with you and you're not hearing what I have to say. Let's get somebody in the middle.
Okay.
Let's get an arbitrator. Let's get a therapist in the middle here to help us straighten this out.
I think that's a really good, really good advice, because oftentimes I think my husband, you know, I think he just thinks that I'm a little off. I don't mean mentally,
sure.
Just like, and so I think it
would
be helpful.
So get somebody in the middle, you know, get somebody who could say, here's what went wrong with the communication. And there are a lot of therapists who are very good at doing that.
Thank you, Armand. It's always a pleasure,
Lucia,
to speak with you.
Absolutely.
Have a great day.
You too. 212-209-2900. Armand DeMille, let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Armand, it's Tony.
Hello, Tony.
How you doing? I love your music. Just want to tell you that. I always tell you when I call, your music is incredible.
Okay.
I feel like we're kindred souls when it comes to music.
Yeah, great.
You know? Anyway, you know, the thing that I wanted to kind of like chime in about this, I lived this. I went through this and I lived it, and it's behind me now. I had a very, very, very volatile relationship. And the one thing that I was thinking about while you guys were talking was that just like that gentleman that you spoke about, I always try to protect my daughter. So I wouldn't fight back in order to protect my daughter. And again, in retrospect, it's so easy to say, but I realized now that... you know, I wasn't really showing. A lot of it had to do with more me not fighting back, because that's just the way I am. And it was just a cover up that I wasn't really. That was part of it, but I didn't want my daughter to be exposed to that. It was more secondary, and it was me not fighting back, sort of.
Sure, and finding your own way of not being in it.
Exactly, and as a result, what I realized was I was in that marriage a long time, many years. And eventually, when it was dissolved, I realized the error of my ways, you know, because you could find different ways to combat whatever situation. You don't have to fight. And the interesting thing was that even after I got out of it, it was like it was like post-traumatic stress syndrome, you know, like a guy goes to war and he goes home after the war and he still hears the bombs, you know?
Sure.
It was really weird. It took me a good year to 2 years to really be kind of myself again a little bit, because I always felt that being under attack, sort of, you know, it was really
Well, Tony,
weird.
What obviously happened was your marriage recapitulated or recaptured your family life. And it reactivated the early childhood stuff you had that was so painful. And you got trapped in the picture of your family. It was like you were a little kid again. And all during that time, you were a little kid caught with raging parents, you see?
Mm-hmm.
And so you were caught in that trap. And when you finally got out of there and you finally removed yourself, it took you a couple of years to get over that, the battle of that.
Yeah.
You know, it takes some of those damages go a long way. Well, congratulations to you. You've done a lot of good work for yourself.
Yeah, it was really, it's like another life that I have. It's really
good for you, Tony. Thanks for calling in, and you have great taste in music.
You too.
212-209-2900. One last caller. Hi. This is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Yeah, I was listening to what you were saying, and I have a situation where the person not only rages at me for reasons, sometimes I'm like disproportionate to the even what's going on, but they tend to want to sometimes become physical. And
that's kind of dangerous when that happens. Is this a husband of yours?
It's a significant other that I deal with.
Okay, an SO that you live with or somebody who's at a distance?
We don't live together, no.
Yeah,
but,
that's the problem. You see, the problem is that when somebody gets on the edge of physical violence, then all the bets are off. Because I hear you, you know. And you know what you do when you have a raging animal coming at you sometimes?
What?
Feed him. Make him a meal. Say, all right, we'll continue this discussion in a little bit. Here's your favorite food. Because sometimes it's just best to get out of the situation.
It's totally irrational. And there is like no... And I end up doing what you described. I just totally withdraw.
Yeah, you turtle.
I turtle. I just can't. I don't even know what to say, and they'll start screaming at me.
Yeah.
Why don't you
it's
say anything?
It's
answer
a...
me. And I'm totally catatonic because I don't even know. I can't. I'm like paralyzed. I just turn inside, and then the raging goes on, and sometimes it almost verges on physical, you know, physically attacking. And it's like, what? In my mind, what is your problem? It's
well,
not like
you know,
what we're discussing.
You're seeing... I'm going to just answer this because I have to be going.
Yeah.
You're seeing the illness. And you have to remember you're seeing the illness. So don't try to counter it. You know? And like I
what?
Said, you're seeing the illness. The illness itself is what you're seeing when he's raging. It's not him. It's the illness. And you try to get to understanding that. After a while, you'll see it. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I've got to be going. I'll be back with you Tuesday at 1 p.m. And if you want to get a copy of today's show or you want to listen to it again, you go to thepositivemind.com. And you could equally send me an email through that source. Bye-bye for now, my friends. This is Nat Adderley doing Autumn Leaves. We'll be right back.